is also a statement or a report or a note from Irma, not an accountant, so I don't know what some of the instruments are called, but it is some formal reflection on from their side as an independent body on the audit process conducted by the audit committee. That's how I assume I understand it. Now, when lawyers use words like assume, you must know that they are not sure they are sorry. They're trying to feel their way around. So without any further waste of time, we've received a number of apologies, and maybe at this juncture I should ask the secretary to just take us through them.
There's an apology from Professor Dawood Abbas for some family problems. There's an apology from Dr. George. Apology from Ms. Mashiani. Those are the only apologies that he has.
Thank you. I know that Professor has a legal matter that he has to deal with. Very complex issue. All right. On that note, we shall proceed. I don't know if our guest would prefer that we introduce ourselves as members first, and then we give over to them so that immediately upon introducing themselves, they can proceed with the presentation. Maybe let's quickly do so. I've already introduced myself. Honorable Sever, you want to follow?
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. My name is Susanna Rebecca Serena Susanna from Northwest. I'm a member of the committee from the Southern Pacific. Thank you. My name is Dabu Sosuba, a member of the committee from the Southern Pacific. I'm from King of Japan.
Thank you, Chair. Mark Steele, member of SCOAG.
Thank you, Jefferson and Alain Singh. SCOAG, and since you started it, I'm also KZN, and so is Mark Steele. And Chair, I did indicate to you that I might have to dash off with some other commitments, party commitments, and come back during the course of the meeting.
All right. On that note, Auditor General, welcome once again. We haven't seen you in a while. But behind the
just given that everything that is here has been subjected to extensive number of scrutiny. Our intention is to basically place a higher level of focus on those matters that the committee may need to attend to and concentrate on in focusing on this report. And if you allow, Chair, with your permission, may that be ideal to do it in that form. And in that order, that is there. And yes, on that note, I would ask the Chair of the Audit Committee, the Moyo, to make a brief presentation on the work they have been conducting, which is contained also in the annual report, for which the Audit Committee, the committee is going, may want to also consider. This change also in response to our understanding that does help to create a measure of continuity in the relationship that COEC has with the Audit Committee, so that at any point there is a presentation of a report like this during this milestone, that relationship is then brought to a logical conclusion. So I think this is one of the opportunities we could exploit
You're quite right, Chairperson, but all due respect. But I think the honourable member is referring to the report of the Audit Committee, and not the annual report.
The report of the Audit Committee is part of the annual report, contained inside the annual report. Am I making a misinterpretation? Yes,
Chair, the Audit Committee report is part of the annual report that was
external auditors being most easily have issued an unmodified report in the public, unqualified audit report. That report essentially means that they've issued a clear report to say financial statement of the Office of the Auditor General fairly present the affairs of the office, and they are in a position to issue a clear report. As part of the process, the audit committee engaged with both external and internal auditors. And as I said, the external auditors issued a clear report. But as part of auditing, they also issue a management letter, which is really an internal letter, and they raised no material issues, only how the achieving issues are raised. But Chair, I'm sorry, it was a moment I saw my partner, you know, my colleague John Pilsner, who I'm on solar star. If there's anything that you want to add, he's also a member of our.
Just make that as the process that seems interesting to colleagues and the press, and then proceed so we don't have to include everybody at once. Yeah.
And then John can kick me for saying the wrong thing. The internal auditors are part of the internal control process within the office, and we appointed an independent firm. And throughout the year, they work with the team, and we look at their reports. They also raise some issues around certain improvements that we'd like to see in the office. And in our opinion, those are dealt adequately by management.
No, I know when we look at other departments, we tend to suggest to them that they must build in-house capacity for internal auditors and at times steer away from appointing outside consultants. We had the case of a public enterprise the other day, which had internal auditors, which they paid $17 million a year for. And we can name it because it's public, it's AA. And we found that there was no internal audit, it was very, very poor level of internal audit. Yet this company was being paid 17 million rand a year for internal audit for its aid. So I'm just asking about when are we going to start building internal capacity with regard to internal audit, or should it be an external function? Then I just wanted to know, Chairperson, on the external auditors, more Stevens. Now, is there any contractual obligation that more Stevens might have breached by saying, well, listen, yeah, I'm leaving you now, I'm joining somebody else? Because it does make it awkward for the audit committee and for SCOAC. Because the next time around, we might find somebody that you appoint, and then a year later they merge with somebody else, and then you've got to repeat the process. So is there any kind of contractual obligation that one could be held for? And the last question, Chair, is, which is just a simple motivation on 3 to 4 audit committee members. You had 3, you want 4 to motivate. Sorry, Chair, that I asked all my questions, because I'm just waiting for the door to open and I might dash. So that's why I asked for questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to carry on from the honourable thing that's concerned with terminology. This use of the word housekeeping, does that raise levels of materiality which we have not yet encountered in a formal audit definition? I have this mental picture in housekeeping of the tea bag being misplaced, but I presume it could also include contentious matters like travel claims and things like that, with which we are familiar in this institution. So just some indication of that. And yes, I would echo the Honourable Singh's concern. Above all, let's have standardized use of terms. If it's unqualified and mean, okay. If unmodified means unqualified and mean, great. But let's be standard, let's be consistent. Thanks, Chair.
Small as they might be, maybe you might share some with us, because it might be small now, even though later. Maybe you can say, when you refer to them, there's some small issues, but are they issues? And secondly, you send the request to, I just want to say, in terms of the recommendation you made, in terms of our appointment to the COIN, is it a norm that you recommend that one from? Is that based on the content? Or is it possible also to make a choice out of 7? Maybe you recommend that. I just want to check that. Is it a norm? Like, you are the brand name you made. So I just want to check that. Is it a must that you leave us only one? Even as in other countries. And then on the issue of conflict, I know we did discuss it, but I just want to remember the question for that. I mean, I still have a concern. Maybe you must convince us why housing, why the system must come from housing if we have a nice property. We do understand maybe your offices are in housing, but I still don't understand.
Thank you very much, Comrade Group, for holding the phone.
All right, let me have my own.
Yes, please. Thank you.
our opinion and the opinion also shared by the office is that at this point in time, it's more cost effective for us to have those resources sitting with an external firm. But literally every year, we actually ask ourselves whether we need to do that. And I can assure this committee that it costs us, when I say us, I'm really speaking for the office, less than 3 million rand to have a firm of auditors. And if you just think about it, you'll possibly need to appoint for that office maybe ago, the Deputy Auditor General had to deal with an issue of getting rid of the finance manager. Not even because there were some fraudulent issues around the issues of competency and that kind of thing. So it's but we're not even talking about things even of that nature now. So I don't think the audit committee has not been worried about that. Are there matters that we should actually be worrying about requiring, in our opinion? Really not. We've actually found a culture that says, and that's actually why the external auditors are comfortable to bring even the smallest item to our attention, because that it means that they get dealt with, they get dealt with accurately. So at this point in time, for the year that's under review, we are comfortable that there's nothing that we need to worry about. And the process of appointing auditors, the norm, we recommend and go out and prove. And therefore, if we're to start bringing 3-4 names, then really not that much of an approval process. We actually set out the criteria, go through the criteria thoroughly, and we actually only pick only the best firm, and we then bring that forward to you for approval. We only bring one firm. We don't bring a shortlist, because the process is to start with many firms, we then shortlist, we go through another iteration, and actually choose the one firm. I can also tell you that actually last year or the year before, that when we were looking through, we were going to appoint, we could actually only even just choose one. The other did not even make some of the criteria. The year before last, we ended up extending the bid for criteria, because the other firms did not meet the criteria that had been set. The issue of Houten is one that we've actually dealt with quite a lot. There is satisfaction among the different members. What were the considerations? The consideration was that if there is something that is required, at the DHG's office, if the staff and partners that work on that account are in Houten, they are easily accessible to the office. So it's a question of the access. It's also a question of the cost. The moment, quite frankly, if we were to appoint a firm from Cape Town, as an example, if they're coming to Pretoria, the moment they leave home at 4 o'clock, in the morning, they start charging the office. So the cost can also be very high. So it was also part of the cost management, part of the cost management culture. On Deloitte have saved at least about 7 years, I think, as internal auditors. And like I said, it's actually good practice to review these appointments. And we also put Deloitte, we're part of the firm that retendered for the work. But having considered the criteria that is laid out, Kobodo came top. And like I said, Deloitte had acquitted themselves well, not as if there's anything. Not as if there's anything wrong. Quite frankly, from an administrative point of view, it's always easier to use the same, but also for independent issues and that kind of thing, it's also important just to review these appointments on an ongoing basis. The question of BTO, in the effect that most divisions have now merged or have been taken over, firstly, the measure was only effective after the completion of the audit. So
Auditor General, they met with us in June, July, to tell us of the embedded discussion. And if I'm correct, I think the measure is only effective, was only effective from 1 September, 2 days ago. So there's no question of the auditor done by BDO. When we signed, it's still more specific. Chair, on the question of the quality assurance process. The quality assurance process, I think we might actually be talking about it. The quality assurance process around how the office conducts its audit is a squad as the audit committee and even a squad, we can't tamper with the way the auditor general conducts his work. They've got to do it very independently. There are a lot of times that you actually want to say, I was once part of the profession, can I whisper something to? But we actually have to really maintain that independence. The only thing that we do, we actually take note of those processes to the extent that it could affect effectiveness. We do not really involve ourselves with that. One of our committee members, Professor Barak, actually sits on that panel, but a totally different, really a totally different exercise, and it would be improper for us to even start telling the Auditor General how they should conduct it, how they should conduct this work. I hope Chair has heard all of the questions. I just wanted to find out from the members whether they were happy.
That is the Chair's job. That's fine. Yes, please proceed if you want to.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps could just add a couple of points to Peter's answers to those questions. In terms of terminology, as Peter says, these things do get changed from time to time by the accounting profession through their various stands, be that auditing or accounting, auditing standards or accounting statements. A perfect example of that is that what we all grew up knowing as a balance sheet is now called a statement of financial position. And it's just that type of change that has been introduced. So there's certainly nothing, no hidden meaning or ominous aspect to it. Also, in terms of the question on the thing that you asked about in any contractual obligation for Moore Stevens, in fact, there's more of a contractual obligation from AGSA, in that they had appointed BDO to do audit work in the vicinity of 6 million rand. If they were to say to BDO, sorry, give up that 6 million rand and now do the audit for 2.5 million rand, I think BDO would be the ones with the question about contractual obligations, because they'd be forfeiting an awful lot of work. Also, if I could comment on the increase of audit committee members from 3 to 4. When the audit committee was first appointed, there were in fact 4 members, and there was one who resigned, and at the time it was decided not to appoint an additional member. The audit committee charter allows for between 3 and 5 members, and the reasons that Peter gave in terms of continuity were one of the key reasons for deciding to go back up to 4. And then the question about whether we should recommend one firm or maybe a short list. My recollection is that we certainly recommended Moore Stevens last year, and that the report that we put forward, I think, showed the scoring of the 3 or 4 firms that we had shortlisted. So SCOAG was able to see the process that we went through and why Moore Stevens were appointed. And I'm pretty sure that's what we did last year, and if it is, I'm sure we would do that again, so that SCOAG would have some insight to how we reached our decision. That's it. Thank you, Chair.
Colleagues at the Stanford, do you want to make any follow-up? I know that last time members did ask questions about the other firms that were there. I'm not sure whether there was some kind of
so that there is some consistency in our thinking. Because we can't have the AG support, this support we say unmodified, there we say unqualified. So that's a bit of clarity that I wanted. And then secondly, also on the question of the appointment of internal audit, I understand that it's a cost-benefit analysis that you've done. But I think for us here, we sit on a different platform. We've also got to allow that same kind of argument to be put forward by departments or state-owned enterprises when they come to us in that platform and say, well, you know, we've got external internal auditors because of A, B, and C. So, you know, what I'm saying is we need to be armed. We are on the same side. We are fighting the same war together. So we just need to be armed when we, you know, tackle these issues with others, because what we say to you, we must be able to say to them and vice versa.
I want to bid for that. If you tell me that one of the criteria that you might
of the terminology, so that the auditors may be trying to convey a message, but the recipients of the message may be receiving a different message. How do we bridge the gap between the provider of the information and the recipient of the information? So those are the issues when we get to the audit standards, I think we may want to engage further. But this is not to say that I'm preempting any responses that you'd be offering. Please proceed.
Chair, I do have too much with question of terminology, but unfortunately some of the cuts are dealt with, like John said, I grew up knowing thinking I might be wrong, but I think going back now to about 2000, that's 10 years. And as far as I know, it's got absolutely no beneficial interest, so they can't be. Even if you are present to the appointment, they can't because he's actually got no beneficial interest in and that the conflict of interest will only arise if you sell the benefits out of that. And that's certainly the case. On the question of re-advertising and actually bringing only one firm, when we're going through this, we say the correct thing. For the audit committee to recommend and go out to approve. Because we actually went even through a process that said, should we not have members of SCOAC also sitting in the panel that looks at this? And we said we are then going to confuse the two roles of recommending and approval because you can't recommend and be the person that approves. And generally when you approve, you don't want one thing brought for your approval. You don't bring five things to say, make a choice. You actually make a recommendation. The recommendation by its nature will be, we recommend you do this. You do have, however, if you do not want to agree with our recommendation, you can actually turn it down. But bearing in mind that we advertise what the criteria are, I think it will only be proper for you not to approve what we're recommending if you think it's flawed. But if we're to change the criteria, we'll have to re-advertise. We'll actually have to re-advertise everything. And so for us, it's actually just bringing one. And if the one that's appointed, like in this case, falls off, go through the question, do we appoint the next best or we start afresh? Firstly, the information is now a bit dated. Things have changed. Our view is that we've got to start afresh. So we don't really want to make the appointment. My suggestion is that we stick with that appointment. It's clean because you actually have a record of how you chose that. Yes. Parliament might change, people might change, but if the process is robust, I think we must actually have confidence. Certainly, I don't think that I'll be in this committee forever, but so is John. But we are comfortable that anybody that looks at it can actually go back and say, this is a criteria. That's why we went through a long process in this committee. If I remember, we spent over 4 hours talking about it. Criteria, so it was the robust process. One question of the process, you are right that it appears to be excluding others. Let's also bear in mind that when people are appointed to work for the office of the auditor general in the so-called contracted within, we do have also a provincial unit. If the auditor general is giving work case at end, the general will not be work to spend that does not have office in case of any matter. So they will not. So it's actually fair. We think it is fair for everybody. So
one Dr. Douglas was ultimately responsible for the appointment with Lisa.
None of the one thing that I mentioned earlier, that we will also be sensitive to what constitutes an executive decision, in respect of which we as a committee wouldn't want to give direction on, and what constitutes something which, if for example, in the course of looking at a question, why serve in a particular province as opposed to another province, there is an underlying issue that we want to raise relating to equity or unfair discrimination of some kind based on whatever unconstitutional consideration, etc., that certainly we can exercise that kind of oversight. But if it's a question of executive preferences, in your view, influenced objectively or by objective consideration of cost of workability, I think the issue of separation between what constitutes an executive decision and what constitutes a matter in respect of which we can exercise oversight, we would have to make that distinction, and at that point decide whether or not it is a matter we can pursue. So at this stage, I would say that you have responded to the question and explained it, and I don't think we would want to necessarily take it further from that, because I think another consideration also is that I assume that as you conduct audits in various provinces and various municipalities or entities that are located outside of Gauteng, you would probably, if you outsource, in the same vein of cost effectiveness, probably engage them firmly that are closest to those areas, if such firms of the caliber that is prescribed are in fact available and willing to take up the work. But that I'll leave to you to deal further with. I'm just raising that as another angle, that auditing matters at a national level is one thing, and auditing matters further down at the decentralized station is another matter. There might be work that others might get. It's more practical issues to me, unless there is a matter that needs to be raised arising out of that. DG wanted to comment.
To make a suggestion, Chair, that maybe one of the things the committee must consider going forward is getting a deeper understanding of the landscape of independent auditors, sort of, and understand that entire environment in relation to what the Office of the Auditor General can get out of their sort of impact. I think that's probably a bigger question that we need to do. Because the more we're going to get into an engagement about criteria for appointment, the more we might use considerations or arguments that are generally applicable in a digital market of sourcing for them. Whereas there are many unique circumstances that impact on the Office of the Auditor General, including the entire landscape of auditors. Sort of, that information, I'm sure, is available. And the reason I'm saying this is that part of our deliberation, half a billion of it is paid out to the profession. We spend about 500 million that you will see in our annual report on that. But immediately, when you look at the entire population of auditors, there's probably close to 90% of the auditors in South Africa that are excluded from becoming our auditors. The question then is, anybody, wherever they are, whether they are in Northwest, as long as they could do it. But the point is, many of those are cash only because of the size of the medium size and the small plan. If you look across all provinces of South Africa, and you look at the income statements of those audit firms, predominantly they are doing work for the Auditor General and they are doing private work as well. So they will not forgo the opportunity to grow their base of the public sector auditing that they are doing on our behalf to settle for something that is limited to our audit work. So that's really the issue. And I think that if all those elements can be made available to the committee to have a full understanding of the whole landscape of independent auditors, that will answer a number of these questions. And then at least we can get guidance from the committee as to what are the best possible criteria to settle for when we are going to apply for it.
Let's not belabor the issue. I think the point is fairly straightforward. In any case, you'd recall, did we invite Irbalan here to come and visit the committee? What I have had in mind is that if we find need to invite them again, because they regulate the entire audit environment, we could do so. And the kind of mapping that the DAG is alluding to maybe could be explained. Also, the point made earlier that the big eight is now the big four. So it looks like there's a shrinkage in terms of the spread. You're having fewer and fewer major players. So that's going to become an increasing challenge in line with what you have just said now. Right, we'll look at those things.
Was perhaps a little light-hearted, but you'll be relieved to hear that in terms of
some of the issues. That one of our responsibilities as members of parliament is to protect the interests of all South Africans. So if somebody out there asks you this question, you must be empowered, and I think today I am empowered. That is mainly why I want that information. In regard to executive responsibility, I think I'm clear on that. Because we have to know these things as the committee responsible in this regard. I think there were two issues that were raised in the constituency office, and I raised them into the other one I will raise during the presentation of the issue. So this is one of the issues that people will ask you, why this, why not that? But I cannot just go then and answer, assuming that I know. It's best to get correct information so that you respond and protect the AG's office. So not only in voting, but even in our community.
No, I accept. That's why I said they can respond to that. But from the point of view of my role as the moderator, I need to give guidance as to what ultimately is the implication. Now, we say in the committee that we have a final say in determining certain matters, or is it a matter in respect of which we may inquire for purposes of information, but make it clear that we are not, in fact, exercising oversight in respect of that matter because of the nature of the matter being an executive decision matter. That's the context in which I was saying. But members are free to ask any question. And the purpose of the chairperson is to decide whether that issue should be dealt with and what manner it should take in being dealt with. Mrs. Stone.
Thank you, Chair. I'm relying on your generosity, which you've just set out, to permit me to ask this question. It's in terms of the reliance that audit firms place on public audit income, if you like, and the proposed amendments to, I think it's the Companies Act, which will reduce the compulsion of private firms to have external audits, is presumably going to have the effect that A, smaller companies will merge with bigger ones, and secondly, if it comes into effect, that there will be more rather than less reliance on public audit, because that will continue to be compulsory. And therefore, in fact, that the potential pool for firms able, willing, with a capacity to do something like the AG's audit will in fact be reduced. Now, is there any sense within the office or within the audit committee that this might be a problem going forward in actually finding suitable firms able to do this audit?
Honourable thing. Yeah, Chairperson, just in support of colleagues, I think at some stage, not now, we need to, as the audit committee starts looking at the appointment of the next external auditor, we possibly need to revisit the what is called hurdle package as a committee. Because I take their point, and the point is made very well, that supposing you have a firm of auditors based in Northwest Province, who, in putting in their tender, their price, including the need to travel to Gauteng, to the head office, comes in lower than Gauteng-based auditing firm. And I can understand you want a Gauteng-based firm because of closeness to head office and things like that. But if you find that they come in cheaper and they can provide you a service, why should they be excluded? So maybe we need to, at some stage, re-look at the sort of hurdle criteria, and in the meanwhile, get some kind of a motivation in writing from the audit committee and the office committee on what informs their thinking to apply this hurdle criteria. Yeah.
Chair, may I respond to Honourable Steele's question about the impact of the new Companies Act and whether the pool of auditors is available? As a generalisation, the smaller auditors are obviously the people who are going to be most affected by that. And I don't think any of them would qualify on a materiality basis to tender for the audit of the Auditor General. The firms that do work are within the public sector and work of companies listed on the JSE will not be as affected by the new legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Colleagues, it's almost 11, and tea is ready for us. We've only dealt with the audit report from the audit committee. Some of the issues that we have raised, I think, can be carried forward through other processes, our processes. Before we leave the session, I want to satisfy that everybody is happy with the work we've covered thus far as far as the audit committee is concerned, because the next round will now be focusing on the report. And if it's 11 now, I'm not sure how much time we want to give for that other process. Can I get an indication? How long are we able to go beyond here so that we can restructure our plans accordingly? Colleagues want to guide me from a time point of view. Yes, Honourable Kusimo.
I think maybe we can go in private an hour, especially because there are members who want to be right now.
That we immediately break for 5 minutes, get ourselves a cup of tea and come back to the meeting and proceed with the annual report. The relevant commission receives nomination, interviews candidates, makes recommendations, and if you look at the number of court judgments, the body that is supposed to make an appointment or approve the appointment does not have to redo the exercise itself. It either rejects or accepts the appointment and cannot even substitute the recommendation for an alternative. So the only authority we would have as going is to say we're satisfied with the work that you have done and we accept your recommendation, or say we have issues in respect of which we think you need to go back and do certain things and retable the recommendation.
any other activity with results, that we have placed resources to deal with. But those that we believe needed our greatest amount of attention are the ones that we will be highlighting today. So that the discussion in the next session that will follow can then deal with those issues together with any other matters that the committee would like to deal with when the hearing, official hearing, is conducted. So in a nutshell, we take this as an information session, a briefing session, which is still going to be followed by the hearing. And in those matters that are going to follow in the future meeting, if I can also start with what is in the very last slide of this discussion. We have dealt with the issue of the appointment of auditors, which is meant to be an annual responsibility of the of COEC to either confirm the existing auditors or appoint new auditors if the auditors have vacated office. The other secondary matter that COEC will need to deal with is the issue of what should be done with the surplus that the office would have generated, and in this case there is a surplus for the first time after a long drought of deficits, whose story and circumstances were well understood to be around the funding model of the office. It has dealt with the issue of the funding model of the office. There is a surplus for the first time. But that's what I should highlight, that in the future meeting, that is one issue that we may need to provide more information so that a decision around what to be done with the surplus will need to come from the government. The rest of information relates to the issue that would have been part of the priorities of the organization in terms of our mandate as an organization to audit report to Parliament and to also make every effort to get the right result to be reported to Parliament by other state entities. So the issue of the simplicity of our report, the relevance of our report, and clarity of our message in our report is something that we have placed greater attention to. And also the issue of our ongoing engagement with the auditees through our direct visibility as a leadership is something that we've placed a greater attention as an office. And those matters will be covered in a greater detail in our general report. So this is where the annual report dovetails with the general report. Because if you read them in the annual report, we're not going to get more explicit information. It will simply be saying we have, and we are satisfied that we have conducted ourselves in the manner that responds to the issues that need to be dealt with in the general report. And it will be good in the next session to in exploring these two topics.
past, as you may be aware, Chair, it's something that we've been very vocal about. It's something that we have, because it was not happening in the manner in which we believe it should be happening, we even specifically made the point that unless it happens, nothing would probably change in the audit outcome. And the audit outcome of the past few years have demonstrated that things have been basically stacked. And it's these meetings, obviously, there are specific matters that require collective leadership, which we have specified both in the annual report and in the general report as well. So there's a lot that's happening with regard to this area. Now, coming back to what it is that we have measured ourselves against insofar as this is concerned, one goes through the annual report. There are specific measures that we have highlighted here, which, as we go through the annual report, we just want to draw your attention to. Most importantly, it has been the build-up on what it is that we do as an office to make sure that we ourselves are consistent in the way we should treat matters. What sort of level of relevance in terms of the index that we can highlight, and one of the issues that has been measured in the annual report, the relevant index in terms of the opinion and the views of the people that engage with, how do they perceive the significance of this information. On the question of visibility, there are a few things that we're also measuring, which will all culminate eventually into the reputation index going forward. So I'm just trying to draw what I'm saying here to what it is that we'll be measuring in an office, so that when you look at the annual report, you are able to draw the difference in what is the office's priority at a point in time. And these priorities and measures change and get escalated from year to year. There are other issues that we have highlighted, which I'm going to ask the AG to elaborate on in relation to the funding model, which has been a topical subject in the last few years of the office, and the fact that we've now broken the back of that problem with the approval of certain steps that we have agreed with the COVID last year. We've seen the early benefit of a revised and refined funding model. The other issue are some of the interventions that we've made on the human resource side, which have also resulted in very visible benefits in terms of the elongated problems we're having in terms of the staff turnover retention. So we're seeing early signs of success in some of the decisions that we have engaged extensively with going in the early part of the COVID reception in the fourth calendar. And lastly, the issue of how do we lead by example in the whole facility. Some of it has been demonstrated by the work of the report and feedback from the audit committee, and some of the work is what we do internally to sustain and reaffirm what the audit committee chair has shared with COVID. And DG will elaborate on some of these issues, although most of it are reflected in this slide presentation. I just thought I should just comment on step two priorities, which go with understand very well as being how clearly are we understood out there in our audit report, and what do we do to make that those messages in the audit report a lot more acted upon, let's say, acted upon by the leadership that should take it. I do try to share that covers my very detail. I'll hand over to Jimmy now to take us through the other three priorities which go with should be interested in being the funding, human resource management, as well as leading by example principles.
Thank you very much, AG. The presentation that I'm going to be following, as DJ indicated, with just a few of the members, is an additional insight into what is contained in our annual report. But before I do that, also I think it's important to highlight some of the achievements that the office has recorded the year that ended. As AG indicated, that is the first year in personal issues that were dealing with also are specialized in many institutions that is turning 100 years soon. We have finished in the last month 10 years as auditors of the United Nations. It was a great opportunity to expose our people to doing what we do here on an international scale. So I think those highlights are important to also contextualize the work that has happened thus far. When the office started professionalizing about 10 years or so ago, where it started setting up a training accountant team, when you looked around in the country for the profile of the people in the Auditor General, it was rare to find people who are chartered accountants. Those type of qualifications, people with information in audit expertise, people with various types of expertise that all together contribute to dealing with auditing in the public sector in a complex environment as we find today. We can safely say that also that investment and continuing to put an investment in this area has generated for us at the end of March this year something around 330 chartered accountants on board. We have them. Many of them are in senior management. Many of them are in different levels in the organization. But in addition to that, a very specific qualification is what is called Recognized Government Auditor, RGA. There's somewhere around 220 of those people on board. So I think all of this, when we look at the annual report, we ought to be looking at it as something that is a continuous change to deepen the relevance and the appropriateness of the institution of the Auditor General as well as the people that need it. Going into the specific presentation, on my side, I'm not going to repeat the issues that the DGA has already spoken to. Of what we have achieved in the first chapter of our five goals. What five goals have been highlighted? One of them is to focus on the simplicity of the message. The AG has spoken to that. The other one is also to be visible, taking that message out to those to whom it matters. There's been some elaborate commentary on that one. I will deal with the area of the funding model, and if I go into the funding model slide that highlights the prevalent issues that I'm interested to highlight for members of the committee, and of course, these that I'm going to highlight here are not exclusively the only issues that are relevant for our appreciation in respect of how are we doing in respect of the generation, the utilization, and what is going to be done with what is being obtained according to the point that you made as one of the decisions to be made in the next engagement. Certainly, what we wished for when we submitted the funding model was that in order for us to continue to be able to fund our operation, we needed to at least at a minimum have a margin coming out of our revenue generated, that is somewhere around 3%. And if you look at that slide on the board, where we were was absolutely an area that was not desirable. We moved from a situation before we implemented the revised tariff according to the funding model from 22% margin. And that 22% is really effectively saying that this is the extent of funds that we have in order to ensure that we can continue operational existence without having to ask for money from anybody. So we're now sitting at 30%, and that's the ideal situation. And then we say, if we can make the 30% according to the gross profit percentage, we will be in a position to employ people in our support unit. We will be in a position to replace laptops that our staff are able to take to the audit team. We will be able to pay for various other infrastructure requirements that the office has. As you all know, we exist in every province of the country, and we pay the normal things that people who have buildings pay for. that we generate from the invoices that we perform across the entire system of government to ensure that at least when we continue implementing our mandate in respect of what has been articulated in Chapter 1 of our goals, we shall not find ourselves in a situation where we must put ourselves in a compromising position asking somebody for money to do the things that we are about to be able to do in a financially sustainable environment. Having done all that was required to manage our resources, we ended up with an amount that was in excess of what we felt we needed to spend, which was the 99 million surplus, a matter which I think will be a subject of impeachment once we have put together our analysis of what are the elements of that 99 million that are possibly in cash and what are elements of that 99 million surplus that are possibly still being owed by policies that have not all of them paid our future. Then takes me to a point which is also linked to the following line. One looks at that slide before we move to the next one. That slide where we're showing the graph, you'll see that years before 2010, we were on the negative side of the graph. That's why that brown graph is moving down. Now, let's see here from looking at that. There's been a significant turnaround in respect of the fortune, at least at the beginning of the implementation of this money model. And there are two elements to it. One, no doubt about the fact that we now have a better tariff than we used. But secondly, we've also done things well as part of rearranging and using the absolute minimum of resources required on the road. So there's an element of synergy and an offer. As a result, for the first time, we also felt that it will be fair to meet our obligation to our people, because for all the years that we have not been making the required surplus, we have had to bump the option of paying people a bonus. Actually have then had to come to the party and said, if performance is achieved at an individual level, and there's a proper evaluation process where everyone has been evaluated for their results and their contribution to this. We also met the obligation. You will see in our accounts that we are presenting written in the notes as well, there will be an amount paid in respect of recognizing the obligation of performance. We still are stuck with a number of municipalities, if I move to the next slide, that are struggling to continue to pay our fees when they fall due at the end of this financial year. We were somewhere around 350 million owing by a combination of some of them in the area of local government, others in provinces and national departments. But the main concept that which shows the total of the invoices is not cash. So I think when we have the discussion about the cash, about the surplus, let's say for example, somebody says the repatriate the whole surplus to the national revenue fund. Our situation must be looked at as a trading. This is a trading account, whereas a department is an account where money is made available to the department. If it doesn't build all the 2,000 houses, then it means sitting with the cash, and therefore that cash is needed once the surplus. If I move on from the financial side of things, and I guess there's a number of disclosures that are made also in the financial statements, and I think that it's good that we are not concluding the discussion on the annual report today. I'm sure members will go through some of the highlights of the report and pick up other elements of what the disclosure, as well as what we may be required to talk in on the in the human resource area, one of the things that was highlighted in one of the headlines a couple of years ago was the extent of vacancies that the office had. Way back in 2007, one compared the situation then to where we are now, we can basically say that we have indeed made a dent in this area, and it's clearly reflected in the reduction in our staff turnover from around 11% to about 6.6%. So the effort that we are putting into training, encouraging, and developing our own talent and translated among others, and people wanting to stay longer at the Auditor General, so that the investment we put into our people environment can pay off. Because there's no better auditor than a person that has done it in that institution for a number of years. And when they see the same thing for more than three times, sometimes it's at that point that they develop creative ways of dealing with the same problem. Unlike having to attract new people all the time, spend a lot of money trying to train them before they become ripe for the picking, then you've already gone back to the market to spend more money trying to find another person who has been adapted to the environment. So we think this is very strategic that this picture this way and even better. As I say, this is the lifeblood of the audit office. Without people and lots of computers and desks, there can be no expression of an opinion. I think it speaks for itself how the reduction has happened in the critical parts of the organization. From the life of the 724 to the average of the 3 total. It's satisfying, I think, to also note that where it matters most, the people at manager and assistant manager level, major reduction from where we were in 2007 to 2010. Which means that the people who have got the elementary experience have now moved into the areas of supervisory roles. Very important for us because there's a lot of people below them, that is the training auditor, who continuously need to after when it comes to doing the field work at the different departments and the parties and all of that. The more strength you have as manager and senior manager and assistant manager level, the better it is for quality issues, for issues of applying professional judgment. Because those people at those levels are beginning to exercise professional judgment rather than doing the picking job of identifying an invoice to an account for the critical mass of people who are able to supervise, who are able to make calls, who are able to distinguish between true audit evidence and spin. That was critical, and we think that if we can continue to improve that area, it will make life easier. And the last chapter, as you said, the area of leading by example. If one looks at the picture that's painted here, the picture that's painted in blue is probably the one that is not more comfortable because it says to us that at the time that there was an independent evaluation of our quality and the quality of work that we did, more of the senior managers
making sure that the day that the possibility of a opinion that is qualified must be continuously to bear. And the deferral of that day exempt by the outcome of what a positive internal control environment that we have. So when we are committed to say in this annual report to continue to do more of that. Chair, that's my last slide on the five goals that we have reporting on. And I think that the committee from here on will take that annual report together with the staff that we promised in our strategic plan document and look at how the promises translated to the actual outcome. So there's one more that I'm missing here, There's one more that I'm missing here on the area of transformation, which talks to how we have fared the steps of dishing out the web to private audience also. You see that by terms of unique and large, then that's where the bulk of our work would go. But predominantly, most of your lab firms in the profession, they play in the medium and small category. But in terms of the broad definition of transformation, it is the program of the big and large firms to qualify for it because of the contracts and all of that. So we have done some good work in that regard, in that we have been able to allocate work and spread the work that we allocate quite widely in the profession. Like I said earlier, we had a budget around 500 million rand. That's what we spent in the process of helping the profession grow and continue to work with us. And then we move to the next one. This is the equity profile of the office. Prospect of designated groups and non-designated groups. Blue, as I say, people from different major groups are combined across all our provinces, and we think that the place that we wanted to be, and we will continue to improve on that. Major issue here that we will need to improve, we know, to make sure that as we retain people, we introduce them to the senior level in the organization, and that includes dealing with issues of gender equity at leadership level as well. I have got a game that we have taken on board to drive forward. And that's the slide that we want to have. And I think
just wanted to check
with the chair, maybe it could be a point that we need to pay. Regarding the presentation we have done, and also recognizing the fact that a substantial number of committee members have not been through this. I was just wondering whether it would be not a good idea for the committee to meet alone the next engagement, so that at least for the benefit of those members that they are not present today, as well as if, I don't know how what process the committee will go through in terms of getting to hone in on the issues on which they will be required. And maybe they will also be, during the next week, giving this report to the other chair to do that, so that they can have their own meeting. Therefore, as well as to also get into committee member application because of the issue. So that at least for us, we come the week after, not necessarily the next week. Because I can imagine between now and Monday, members are not in parliament and they only come in Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm asking myself, to what extent would have been justice done to some of the issues that are here? Because when you come back, then we will probably become a normal situation. I'm just wondering if it would be helpful that the committee proceed. So, and then get invited to attend the conversation. And then all the questions and all the issues are already here in the mind of committee members. We'll be here to give you whatever we need to respond to.
Thank you. You are right. Ordinarily, the committee researcher would go and interrogate the report in the light of anything else. You've got your work cut out for you. As soon as you're ready with